Shire, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In Chicago, more than 74 million Americans are under heat alerts from Southern California to Southern Florida. Phoenix sets a record by hitting 110 degrees or more for the 19th straight day. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
In Las Vegas, several Delta passengers were overcome by heat while waiting on the tarmac. The outside temperature was 114. The flight was canceled and the company issued an apology.
If you're outside and you start to feel like you're getting a heat-related illness, just maybe throw cool water on you, okay? And then if you have a fan, that's great.
That's ER Dr. Frank Lovecchio. The Texas Inspector General's office opens an investigation into a state trooper's allegations of abusive treatment of migrants trying to cross the southern border. CBS's Manuel Bajorquez.
In an internal email dated July 3rd, a state trooper wrote, "I believe we have stepped over a line into the inhumane." Listing examples, "We were given orders to push the people back into the water to go to Mexico," adding, "There was the very real potential of exhausted people drowning." He added, "Due to the extreme heat, the order to not give people water needs to be immediately reversed as well."
Texas Governor Greg Abbott says his operation has given no order that would compromise the lives of migrants. A letter sent by Special Counsel Jack Smith says former President Trump is the target of an investigation into efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
We don't know the scope of the indictment, but most likely it involves Trump knowing that, in fact, he had lost the election, continuing to perpetuate the lies.
Trump has been invited to appear before a grand jury on Thursday. A Mississippi teenager dies at a poultry plant. WHLT-TV's Brandon Rains.
In Hattiesburg, a 16-year-old boy was killed while operating equipment at Marjack Poultry last Friday. According to the company, the teen was conducting sanitation operations at the facility. OSHA is investigating the death. Marjack says they're cooperating with the investigators. An exact cause of death has not been released.
Actors joined writers on the picket line in New York City as they brace for a long standoff with studios over pay, residuals, and AI protections. Actor Kira Sedgwick marched at Rockefeller Plaza.
This is a righteous fight. Anyone who does some due diligence and research on what it is that we're asking for and what it is that they were unwilling to give will understand on a very visceral level what that means.
A jury has decided that Johnson & Johnson must pay almost $19 million to a California man who said he developed cancer from exposure to its baby powder. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Ah, thinking about gas mileage. You know, changing your oil with a full synthetic oil like Valvoline Advanced can help your engine get more miles. Right now, buy a 5-quart jug and get a free STP Extended Life Oil Filter. That's right, free. Get started on your next job today with the parts you need, when you need them, at AutoZone or AutoZone.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Hey, you know what I don't get? Why is that company always telling you to just do what? What is it? To just look like everybody else? Or maybe just pay way too much for your shoes? Well, Skechers, we know what we want you to do. Just slip in. That's right, just slip in. To do hands-free Skechers slip-ins. Why? Because slip-ins are the easiest, most comfortable shoes ever. You don't have to bend down to put them on. You don't even have to touch them. Find slip-ins for the whole family at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Call your local Bug Tussle rep today to find out how you can get free internet service. For Monroe, Juneau, and Adams counties, call Josh at 608-322-2190. For Jackson County, call Rhett at 715-771-3535. For Clark, Marathon, Wood, and Portage counties, call Ashley at 920-501-8717. And for Wisher and Wapaka counties, call Kate at 920-401-5470.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. mainly clear skies overnight with lows around 59. Winds out of the south around 5 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, chance for scattered storms. High temperatures reach up to 83. Scattered thunderstorms likely. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 60. Mainly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 63.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Work of Food Banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
Yeah, I wanna go outside, I wanna be.
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
What if I just, instead of giving out the talk of text line, just started giving up Robin Voss's number all the time? I saw it go. 844-96-PARTY. What is it?
I saw it go. Write it down. 608-237-9163. Call now.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Who do you think is to blame for the student loan crisis? Is it schools? Is it banks? Is it the government? Is it the students themselves? I ask because there is a survey out that asked young Americans who they think is responsible for student loans not being forgiven. And basically right now, that survey says they're piling the blame on their student debt balances on conservatives, largely the Supreme Court. And this was a survey poll done by Generation Lab and provided exclusively to Axios. And so, but I feel like those are two different questions. There's a question of who's blaming whom for the lack of student loan forgiveness versus a question about how do we get in this mess in the first place? And so I would love to hear from you more on the latter of when you think about the fact that there are tens of millions of borrowers in the U.S., who collectively owe more than $1 trillion. Why did this happen? 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. I certainly don't blame the students themselves because I don't think you see that. It's like blaming all the people who took the crappy mortgages in the lead up to the housing crisis in 2008 and saying, well, you should have been smarter. You should have known that was a bad loan. And I feel like it's just interesting to think because, you know, the problem with asking the question that the survey asked is I think there's a lot of people who don't think student loans should be forgiven at all. And so there is no blame to be had. But interested to hear from you. Who do you think is to blame for the student loan crisis? 844-967-2789. But as far as that that survey goes, 47% said the Supreme Court was responsible. This is for student loan, the lack of student loan forgiveness. 38% said the Republicans were responsible. 10% said Biden was responsible. And 5% said Democrats were responsible. So I thought that was interesting to think potentially what that could mean for 2024. Jane Madner, what do you think?
Wow. I understand not wanting to blame the students entirely because, again, understanding interest and what that's going to mean down the road. And but boy, and I think you make a good point about the housing crisis, the mortgage crisis leading up to the crash in 2008, where, like you said, they knew they were, the people who were selling these mortgages knew they were bad. Right? And so it's tough. It's tough.
But here's the thing. So in what situation does a bank give an 18-year-old a loan to start a business without a solid business plan?
Good point. I mean, isn't the whole lending screwed up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of that's screwed up as far as, like, one, there's, like, predatory loans. There's the fact that the interest rates can't be, and, like you can refinance your house, but you can't refinance your student loans.
Right.
And the fact, and you can also never file for bankruptcy. And so there's, that's where it comes into the government and the fact of, like, how they've decided to set up these loans that are so different from everything else that we do when it comes to the banking system. There's the fact that when it comes to public schools, at least in Wisconsin, how much of the share of publicly funded schools are not being publicly funded. So then thus the tuitions go up. There's the fact that student, like the colleges themselves are becoming more expensive because of administrator, like how, like the administrators and how much like they spend on their marketing in a new building in order to be competitive and try to attract more students. And so that's what I mean. There's a lot of blame to go around. And I just don't know if it's as much about personal responsibility than laying squarely at the feet of tens of millions of people who were told you have to go to college if you want to
be successful.
Be successful.
Yep. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Karina from Milwaukee. Good morning, Karina. What do you think?
Good morning, guys. I'm lucky enough. I've been into two different educational systems. I was as a student and I was as an instructor. And I tell you this, education of your people, it's an investment. You see, it's investment. It's investment in your people, in your future education. Not making a business out of it. Not earning interest on the loans. I give you an example. In Russia, right? Because I don't know any other system what have a national education. And actually, while I was listening to you, I would probably go back and look how Britain or France or any other country who's offering national education, how did they get to this point? I don't know. But I know how it's happening in Russia because of the revolution. Now, look, this is a different mentality. In Russia, because you spend money for a future, for your kids, and those kids picking up profession and trying to figure out what they can be best at for government money, because the government is the ultimate parent, right? Ultimate taking care of, ultimately responsible for the country, because we pay our government taxes to do that for us. So basically, when you are in the higher education in Russia, you have... first of all, it's free. Secondary, when you in school, you in school like 8 to 10 hours. It's your working day practically. And everybody consider you a working person when you are in the college. Government also will pay you statements depending on your grades, so you don't have to look for a work and pay attention to your education.
That's interesting.
In this country, education is something what would be used for a future, your future, right? So when you go to college, they're telling you, well, you can get this job, this job, this job. This is what's going to pay you this. This is job what it's going to pay you that. And when you're taking a loan, it's obvious that you will be able to pay it off. Well, the thing is, if the system would be adjusted to loans and a salary, then it's a possible. Then there's the question, why are we doing that when we can offer free education? We have enough money. If we're giving $3 billion to Ukraine, we have enough money to offer at least a half a part of national education as well as the health care to invest in your future. This government do not invest in their people. This government doesn't want smart and healthy population. They want dumb and sick. And this is why it's coming from the conservative and Republicans, because you can see what they're doing. They're removing
absolutely
money from education. They're removing
thanks so much
money
for the
from healthcare.
Thanks so much for the call, Karina. I think that, and I think that, I mean, I agree as far as the investment in your people. And, you know, so many European countries, it is an actual public education if you choose to keep going. And so it sounds like, at least from Karina's point of view, this is something that the government of putting the financial burden as far as it's your investment. And again, it comes back to, I think, the ethos of individualism and personal responsibility that we have in this country. But it, collectively, I don't know if it's working out. What do you think? 844-967-2789.
Jack from Merrimack. Good morning, Jack. What do you want to say?
Good morning. Well, over the years, probably since around 1980 and Reagan's, the government isn't the answer, the government's the problem philosophy. Republicans, and it's been primarily Republicans, have cut back in support for all kinds of public education. The universities have been public universities, that is to say, state colleges and state universities have been particularly hard hit. I'm an old guy, but I remember thinking when I was in college, oh, this is great. A person could live on $1,000 a year, go to school full time. It's a wonderful system. When my son graduated from a UW system school, the tuition alone was close to $50,000. Now, I can understand easily how a person could end up working full-time during the summer and even part-time during the school year and still end up with $20,000, $30,000 or more dollars in debt. And that isn't the main UW Madison school. That's one of the UW system schools. Madison was closer to 75,000. So that's the situation that we've been put in by this individual responsibility thing. In other words, don't let the government support anything that benefits anybody except the billionaires. Sorry, but that's kind of the way it is.
No, I totally understand. Thanks so much for the call, Jack. But we would love to hear from you as well, as far as who is to blame mostly, because there's probably a lot of blame to go around, for the fact that tens of millions of people owe more than $1 trillion just in student loans in this country. Can it all be summed up to personal responsibility, or is it the combination of government decisions, the banks, how the schools themselves? 844-967-2789. We will take your texts, take your calls, take your comments on the live stream when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Don't you know I'll always be your babe?
Gee, I'll go thank the dean.
Hey, you're the one who signed your life away.
Yeah, when I was 17, I couldn't comprehend my fate, much less to...
Napa Know-How, sponsored by Napa Auto Parts. With summer temperatures reaching triple digits in parts of the country, make sure to keep your car's air conditioner in good form. First, always clean or change the air filter. And lastly, get your AC serviced. With nearly 6,000 Napa Auto Parts stores and over 17,000 Napa Auto Care centers, Napa is the fuel that helps drivers like you get up and go.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Stay cool this
this summer with AC Pro and O'Reilly Auto Parts. Right now, get a $15 O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card after mail-in rebate with the purchase of select AC Pro ready-to-use refrigerant products that include a hose and gauge. Beat the heat before you hit the road with AC Pro at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Are you ready to start a meaningful career in healthcare? Are you looking for a job that fits your work-life balance? Become a certified direct care professional today and make life better for older adults or people with a disability. WISC Caregiver Careers makes it easy with free online training plus earn a $500 bonus. See your name on Wisconsin's Certified Direct Care Registry. Sign up today at WISCCaregiverCDCP.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's art artists supporting artists in their own words.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown, and Earl Ingram on 540 AM WAUK.
Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuno sitting in for regular host Mark Thompson. And we're joined by Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke from the west side of the city and the east side, I guess, of portions of Wauwatosa. Is that right, Evan?
Right, right. The village and the East Osa.
And we left off the discussion. I'm glad that you compared Wisconsin, our discussion on crime, criminal justice, public safety. We're going to get focused on the city of Milwaukee in a minute. But you left off our discussion talking about the fact that the adult legal age for charging someone with a crime in Wisconsin is the age of 17. And you compared us to a few other states. I'll ask you to repeat them, but Wisconsin's an outlier in that regard. And I was an attorney in the 90s. I'm dating myself a bit when during the big tough on crime era, when really we bumped up, you know, class B felonies, you know, went from 20 years to 40 years to 60 years. Fleeing went from a misdemeanor to a felony across the board. Drug penalties were increased greatly. The juvenile age was lowered from 18 to 17. And then we ended the decade with truth in sentencing, which took away discretionary parole and an indeterminate sentencing system in favor of a system where 10 years means 10 years. And doesn't matter if you're doing really good in prison, you're going to serve your 10 years for the most part, with a few exceptions that have been expanded slightly over the years. So that was the big 90s. And the juvenile age was part of that. And you talked about some other states. Give us a perspective again on that.
Yeah. And just so that listeners understand, you know, Wisconsin's experience in that era was not unique. This was a bipartisan, both kind of nationally and federally. So the federal government expanded a lot of its criminal justice system and criminal penalties, its reach. And states did across the country as well. So that kind of became model legislation that prolificated around the country. And then, you know, maybe 10 years, 12, 15 years later, states started asking, you know, difficult questions about the return on investment. Did it work, right? We kind of pushed all of these tough on crime pieces of legislation during a crime spike in the 90s. And you know, so the people were asking, well, is this working? And there's a lot of data from other places around the country that says a lot of those policies don't make us safer. Specifically for 17-year-olds, the states that I mentioned in America, there are three states, Wisconsin, Texas, and Georgia, where 17-year-olds are adults for everything, every criminal act. So that means, I mean, mom and dad, you're listening, your 17-year-old takes your car out of the driveway, drives down the street, you know, gets arrested for some, you know, criminal action, that, you know, booked and processed with with the adults, you know, in the adult jail, in the adult prison system, which is much more punitive than rehabilitative compared to the juvenile system.
Yeah, I started representing 17-year-old high school seniors after that change in the law when I was still a state public defender. And these were my clients in juvenile court the year prior to that law taking effect. And all of a sudden, we were in adult criminal court. And I could remember even, you know, conservative, I practiced as a public defender in Waukesha County, right, for 7 years. And I remember even conservative Republican prosecutors and judges having a squeamish look on their face going, why is this Waukesha South high school senior in my adult criminal courtroom for a retail theft charge?
Yeah. And there's no real way to go backwards, right? This wasn't a discretionary decision. There's a lot of discretion in the criminal system. And, you know, we can't go down that rabbit hole in even an hour, but this is a state law that says all 17-year-olds are adults. And I wanted to highlight it. I'm glad that we took a couple minutes to talk about it, because as listeners think about how to get involved and how to work on justice issues, there's a lot that has been tried in Madison that hasn't gone forward. We covered some of them, some of those policies that were advanced in the state budget or the marijuana debate. I think this fall and winter coming up, you know, from kind of September 23 on, the rumblings in the hallways of the state capitol is more and more bipartisan support to engage, you know, a bipartisan bill, Republican lead authors to return 17-year-olds to the juvenile system.
Really? I just never thought we'd be able to, you know, because in criminal justice, largely, once you, you know, raise penalties, tighten up, get tougher, however you want to call it, right, it's really hard to undo later. It's just politically almost a non-starter at every turn, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, in my 11 years, we've probably increased criminal penalties 100 times. And I can think of no example that went the other way, right? That's exactly what you're saying, Craig. It's a one-way street. With the benefit of going 47th out of 50 is that you've seen, you know, people have done it. They've tried it, and they've, you know, all of our neighboring states have done it in different ways. And so there's a lot of really compelling evidence out there that says this is going to make us safer, not less safe, that the recidivism rate, the rate that those juveniles, 17-year-olds reoffend, is less when you take them through the rehabilitative juvenile system than through the more punitive adult system.
Yeah, it only makes sense. And I have quite a bit of experience in juvenile law myself that indicates the same, just anecdotally. We're going to head into the break in about a minute and a half. I want to again focus the conversation to our city. Let's set that up by telling our listeners that you are engaged in another race that doesn't involve your office as the 18th district state representative. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, back in December of 22, I announced my candidacy. The election is in April of 2024. I am a candidate and seeking the office of city attorney, which is a citywide elected position in the city of Milwaukee. Only a handful of municipalities elect their city attorneys. Milwaukee is one of them. We can get into more of the detail, but really important job. Essentially, the head of the law firm that represents the city of Milwaukee, about 35 lawyers, handling a whole bunch of different responsibilities, legal responsibilities for the city. And public safety does intertwine with that office in a pretty important way, which we can cover.
Yeah. So, you know, human resources, you know, employment law, zoning, real estate development, public work.
Just the sexy stuff. Yeah.
That's all advised, but also Department of Neighborhood Ordinance Enforcement, right? And so every type of non-criminal citation is prosecuted in the city of Milwaukee by the city attorney's office, right?
That's right. That's right.
And so where that brushes up against crime, criminal justice, nuisance abatement, maybe thrown in, and some other issues, let's pick up the conversation on the other side of the break. We're here with State Representative Evan Goyke on the Paul Revere Show. Craig Mastantuno sitting in for Mark Thompson, talking crime.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. I grew up on tour with my parents, kind of different, but we bonded over music just like other families do over sports, camping, or other interests. And we talked. Little everyday conversations from silly to serious that built a foundation over time. Honest conversations, like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life. And I was so grateful that you and Mom had become these sober, stable people who were always there for me.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs, whether it's music or anything else. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Having low income can mean making tough choices. Choosing between paying for food or medication or a place to live is a reality for many people. Do you know someone who could use some extra help? Find out about the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, administered by Social Security. You could receive monthly SSI payments if your income and financial resources are low and you are 65 or older, or an adult or child with a disability or who is blind. SSI is money you can use to help pay for basic needs, like putting food on the table, keeping the lights on, paying the rent. It can mean new shoes for growing feet or help with medical needs. Call 1-800-772-1213 or visit ssa.gov/SSI to schedule an appointment or start to apply today. That's ssa.gov/SSI. This message produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Daisy was abandoned by her family and placed in foster care at 15 years old. Her life was full of uncertainty. She thought she'd never have a permanent place to call home.
Before I was adopted, I felt like I wasn't enough. I had this hole in my heart, and I never knew what I needed to patch that hole. But when my mom asked to adopt me, that hole was closed. It feels so normal now to say that I'm a part of this family. I am surrounded by love. I feel safe. And that hole inside of me is gone. I am whole. I'm finally enough just as I am.
The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is changing the lives of teenagers at risk of aging out of foster care. Like Daisy, every child deserves a permanent, loving home. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly clear skies overnight with lows around 59. Winds out of the south around 5 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, chance for scattered storms. High temperatures reach up to 83. Scattered thunderstorms likely. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 60. Mainly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 63.
Welcome back to the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuno filling in for regular host Mark Thompson, and we're having a discussion with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Boyke, Wisconsin's 18th District. Welcome back, Evan.
I'm still here, Craig. Thanks. This has been great. Time to get local. Let's talk about the block. Let's talk about the neighborhoods.
Absolutely. After our discussion on kind of the state budget issues revolving around crime and criminal justice, let's talk about our city. It's not been an easy few years, right? We talked about from the perspective of public defenders and district attorneys and police, but from the community level, right? We saw a spike during pandemic that many states across the country, most cities, saw in violent crime, particularly homicides. My perception as a practitioner of criminal law is that mental health as a whole, the mental health of our community and communities suffered greatly, the collective mental health, and that tends to elevate everything from disputes to domestic incidents to other crime-related occurrences. Then we had within all of that, the murder of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter movement, and a lot of the marches and protests and fallout from that. And by fallout from that, I mean, police community relations and what that movement and its response did, to that. So, what do you see around our block? And I'm not going to ask you, at least at this point, to relate it to the city attorney, the office of the city attorney. I mean, I think you've developed an expertise in your time as a state rep and prior to that as a public defender, as someone focused on criminal justice issues. So what are you seeing as a representative of our city?
Yeah, I would say, you know, one of the hardest parts of this discussion in the realm of politics and the political sphere is that everybody, and this is not, you know, this is a curse to the politicians, everyone wants an easy answer. What's the thing? What's the bill that we can pass? How, and sometimes that manifests itself into higher penalties, like we were talking about before the break. If we just made this tougher, the behavior will stop. And, you know, so people want a quick, easy fix to an intensely complex and difficult to solve problem. And so I guess my first answer to the perspective is this is really hard. And no one elected person has the answer, because we're dealing with people that have complexities and different, you know, issues. And it's not just one thing. Where I have gravitated, I have been elected and a representative in the north side, west side of Milwaukee now for a decade. And I have watched neighborhoods win and lose the fight to reduce crime and to keep that reduction down. And I have become a true believer in the kind of quality of life. There's an author named Patrick Sharkey who came to Milwaukee, and he talks about guardians. And sometimes police officers are guardians, and sometimes abuela, or like the matriarch or patriarch of the block, is the guardian. Sometimes it's an ambassador from the Near West Side Partners that kind of walks the street and shows that people are watching and declares the block not the place to engage in criminal activity. And we have lost a lot of those guardians, and we don't invest in those guardians. And some of them work for the government, and some of them absolutely do not work for the government. So I'll give you an example of a neighborhood in my district that I think really exemplifies the victory that can be made when you look at crime holistically. And that's Washington Park neighborhoods. Roughly around Washington Park makes sense, the north side, Lisbon Avenue on the north, Fleet Street on the south, 40th to 35th, roughly. High crime neighborhoods statistically, you know, diverse residential, low home ownership, high poverty rates. And for 3 years, this neighborhood got a grant from the federal government. And really what they did from the grant is they just broke down the walls so they could see each other. It was a nonprofit that led the grant, a lot of community meals. They brought police in to do kind of the beat cop patrol. They brought the landlords that own the rental properties to the table. They brought the churches, the nonprofits. They brought Habitat for Humanity to do, you know, improvements to homeowners that couldn't afford the improvements. And so they're tackling crime. It wasn't like we're going to go get crime. It was just let's get to know each other and let's kind of address challenges as we see them. And crime went down 29% in 3 years.
Wow.
Was there still crime? Yes.
Of course.
But a meaningful change. And then you know what happened? The grant goes away.
Yeah. Right?
I don't think that, you know, some of those investments have lasted. I don't think the crime rate in that neighborhood today is where it was before that effort, but it did creep back up. But I say that example to tell listeners that we can absolutely reduce crime in any neighborhood in the city of Milwaukee, but it can't just be the Milwaukee Police Department. It can't just be the city attorney or the district attorney. It has to be a much more holistic approach that addresses, you know, these layers of quality of life issues.
We are the Paul Revere Show. We're talking with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, Craig Mastantuono filling in for Mark Thompson, regular host. By the way, if you're using the Civic Media app, we're getting your texts, and please keep them coming. We will try to respond to them, and we appreciate them. So, at the beginning of your remarks, I was thinking to myself that it certainly is a truism, I believe, in our business of criminal justice, that healthy communities, you know, and describe healthy, insert a number of adjectives here, do well on these issues. You know, healthy communities have people on the street, people that aren't afraid to walk the street, people that aren't afraid of, you know, engaging with their fellow citizens. They have thriving businesses. They have homes that are inhabited by people raising children. They have schools that hopefully at least are safe at a basic minimal level. And, you know, and when you go up from there, that do better academically. It, you know, I mentioned that I started off my career as a public defender in Waukesha County. Guess what? We had crime in Waukesha County. We had lots of crime in Waukesha County, or I wouldn't have had a job. And there wouldn't have been five devoted branches to criminal courts out of the 12 branches in Waukesha County, if you include the juvenile branch. And so it wasn't lost on me that places with a lot of resources still have people that make knuckleheaded decisions that affect their lives and affect others. But when you pull resources out of a community and you fail to invest in those communities, you just have an exponentiation of the problems that plague, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes what I've seen can happen is that residents can lose faith. And then that kind of social fabric falls away when the people that, you know, usually are those kind of guardians, as somebody else would call them. But, you know, you can kind of, I think listeners picture in the mind, those people that are really community leaders. Like, let me give you an example. There was a homicide a few blocks from my house about a week ago, maybe 5 days ago. And our community, I live in the historic Concordia neighborhood just west of Marquette. The discussion that is happening right now amongst neighbors is really kind of what can we do? And you know, I think people are realistic that, you know, will the solution solve every crime or prevent every crime? No, but it's something. And so kind of restoring what were once going on, you know, kind of pre-pandemic, like structured neighborhood walks. And that's a little tiny thing at dusk to go out and, you know, kind of walk the neighborhood. But the conversation now, this week that's going on is about engaging residents that aren't walking, or, you know, we have some large apartment buildings that, you know, like, how do we diversify this conversation? And I'm just so inspired by the intentionality that these neighbors are going about, okay, this tragedy happened. Instead of being scared, instead of running away or building a higher fence, they are actually saying, how do we get to know the people around us better? And how can we, longtime homeowner in the neighborhood, bring new people in so that we know each other and in that way see each other more and actually improve safety?
And who is the alder or alders that you work with in your district?
I overlap several. Alderman Bauman is mine in my neighborhood here and the neighbor of mine. Alderman Murphy, Stamper, Rainey, and a host in Wauwatosa that I don't know well enough to name yet. There's an intersection with city government too. We talked about the race for city attorney. Part of that, the importance and where the city attorney intersects public safety, as you were mentioning, the kind of code enforcement. A lot of these neighborhoods, you ask that guardian on the block, what's the problem property?
It's they that can, building.
Yeah, they can point to it. They know because they live there and they deal with it. And, you know, in the last couple of years, it's my opinion, we've had a city attorney that hasn't been responsive enough to those concerns. And when people call and they call and they call and they go to the meeting at the church down the street and they raise their concerns and nothing is done, there is a certain point of fatigue that sets in and the guardians quit. And when that happens, that social fabric falls away and you see problems elevate.
Yeah. So basic participation in civic life, right, is a kind of almost a conditioned precedent to having a healthy and thriving neighborhood. And at its best, where I see criminal justice and kind of municipal law enforcement functioning at its highest, You know, you have a police department that can reach out to an attentive city attorney's office that has community prosecution units that can talk about that building and talk about whether to approach it from a nuisance abatement, kind of, you know, attacking the so-called slumlord perspective or individual citation enforcement. That, you know, assistant city attorney can have access to the community prosecutor assigned to the police district at the state district attorney level in case something needs to be investigated and elevated to a state criminal prosecution. And everybody's talking, right? And they're talking with people like you and the alders involved to get that information back to citizens. And, you know, I don't know, in my perspective, it doesn't seem like that's so insurmountable for offices to achieve.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's a big city, and it's hard when you think about taking that to every neighborhood and every block, but that's just part of the job. That's just what you do. You just show up and you give
I'm from Chicago, Evan. That shouldn't be hard to scale up here in Milwaukee, right?
No, it isn't. I don't think it is. And look, not every intervention that we're talking about, not every example leads to some front page headline lawsuit or receivership action by the city attorney or criminal prosecution by the DA, but showing up and trying and listening and being that civic participation. When people feel abandoned by their local leaders, they then, I think, can kind of turn and abandon the effort. I see that. I've seen it turn around and I've seen it fall apart. And I think one of Milwaukee's greatest crime reduction strategies is just doing exactly what we've talked about. And it is kind of the blocking and tackling of good governance, but it goes a long way.
Yeah, I mean, something you said touched me, which was, you know, headline cases aren't where, macrocosmic criminal justice and neighborhood safety is won or lost. It's on the 15 cases a week that involve what to do about the dude dealing drugs down the street. That's pretty low level dealing, how to handle that case. I mean, people say to me, look, I saw you in the paper on a case. And I always say, when I'm doing my best work, nobody's in the paper. Right. Nobody ever finds out that there was ever even a case. Right. And that's because we resolve a lot of things in the criminal justice system before they even get charged, or affording people an opportunity to move through their bad decisions through a deferred prosecution or a diversion agreement where they do the drug treatment, they gain employment, they pay the restitution, or they do what they need to do to get through their bad decisions, and they're given back a chance to walk a healthier path. And, you know,
less likely to do that offense again. And most, in my experience, most kind of constituent calls aren't about a homicide. It's about the garbage cleanup or the house that's run down or the landlord that's a problem. You know, they aren't front page stories, but they are in the lives of those key guardians on the block.
So we got one more segment with State Rep Evan Goyke. Evan, when we come back, I want to talk about two things that it relates to the city attorney's office, which is one, police culture and training and, you know, best practices training for our police department, and then neighborhood development and where the office touches that. We're here with Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke on the Paul Revere Show. This is Craig Mastantuno filling in for Mark Thompson. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Call your local Bug Tussle rep today to find out how you can get free internet service. For Monroe, Juneau, and Adams counties, call Josh at 608-322-2190. For Jackson County, call Rhett at 715-771-3535. For Clark, Marathon, Wood, and Portage counties, call Ashley at 920-501-8717. And for Wisher and Wapaka counties, call Kate at 920-401-5470.
Dynamite! Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Are you looking for more in this world? Are you ready for something bigger? Then we are looking for you. The big-hearted, the bold, the messy, and the gutsy. The teachers, the growers, the builders, the skilled, the sharers, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go all in and all out. We are volunteers, partners, communities, working together, living together, bringing our experience, passion, and joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya, from sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo, we learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff? To go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at peacecorps.gov.
Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
To three, the Todd Alba Show on 540 AM WAUK.
This is Craig Mastantuono hosting the Paul Revere Show. Mark Thompson is the regular host. I'm sitting in for him tonight. We've got with us Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, Wisconsin's 18th district and candidate for City of Milwaukee City Attorney. And that would be in the spring of 2024. Is that right?
Right.
So we've got a shorter time here, and I want to wrap up with a couple of areas where criminal justice, public safety relate to the city attorney's office specifically. First is, and this may take us out just tackling this topic, but the very small topic of police culture and training. So the city attorney's office, first of all, staffs the Fire and Police Commission with an assistant city attorney. And that, you know, that body, due to the recent changes and the coming out of the budget crisis, has not as much of a policy making role as it did. And we don't need to get into a discussion of that. But ACAs, assistant city attorneys, advise the Fire and Police Commission. And I think of the city attorney's role as it relates to the Milwaukee Police Department in two ways: advising on best practices to prevent corporate liability for the city of Milwaukee. And when we talk about police, we're talking about constitutional policing and policing in a way that avoids liability for you and I, the taxpayers of the city of Milwaukee, in damage judgments. And then advising on, you know, a variety of other employment issues, but specifically recruitment, so that the culture of the department is affected. I'm not going to say positively, negatively, but, recruiting and culture affect basically a department and its relationships with the community. And I just see those at an all-time kind of low coming out of 2020. And there's bright spots, but my interactions with a lot of police department officers lead me to think that they're leaving our city in droves, that they have a bit of a resentment with regard to being called into question as it relates to racial effect by policing in our city, and that we have a community that doesn't necessarily trust the officers that they're dealing with to investigate crime around them. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it there's a lot there to unpack, Craig. I certainly feel and have heard some of those same frustrations. They're clearly not universal, right? It's hard to label an entire department the size of the Milwaukee Police Department as all one or the other. But those trends, I think, are your perceptions are not inaccurate. So that listeners understand, the city of Milwaukee is self-insured. So, you know, as Greg was talking about, the role of the city attorney in your kind of risk management is a kind of key piece, because if there is a violation or deprivation of civil rights or harm, we pay. I mean, that in a civil courtroom, money is the language of resolution, right? So what we are talking about here is financial compensation for wrongdoing, and the city attorney's role is really important in really mitigating that. And what I think, Craig, where you were going, where I like your corporate lawyer analogy, which is in essence, if the city of Milwaukee was insured by some insurance company, their attorneys would be providing their client the same type of advice that we need from the city attorneys, the same kind of role from the city attorney's office to say, here are our best practices. Here is how you conduct yourself as a law enforcement officer to avoid liability.
Here's how we avoid liability so that our citizens or our corporation doesn't have to pay out money when things go bad. Every corporation does that, right? And yeah, cities are no different. And I look at it as, you know, a comprehensive training program that in the way I envision it involves, first of all, the city attorney's office. Secondly, the district attorney's office, which is more of an expertise on constitutional policing and police citizen encounters. And then private providers, if appropriate, including people like myself, or retired law enforcement, et cetera, to, you know, kind of get the training program at least to a point where officers know where the lines are that they can and can't cross.
Yeah, and this is not to suggest that the city attorney's office should be responsible for training all aspects of the police department.
No.
Or that are, you know, but it is an important piece of the education and training officers have and should have. And, you know, it's not to say that they don't have any liability training. And I think the conversation that we've had tonight about public safety is to, and my role or hopeful future role as city attorney is to make sure that you're at the table and part of the collaboration. I mean, what I was talking about earlier about healthy, low crime neighborhoods, it's not just the police. They are a part of the solution. They can't be the only piece. A city attorney is not the only solution, but they're a part. So you have to interact with these different governmental entities in a really meaningful and collaborative way. Now, in the case of the city attorney and the police department, you have this important financial relationship as it relates to the city budget and paying out lawsuits. This is good for the taxpayers, right? It's to avoid costly lawsuits. It's good for the police department to avoid getting sued. It's good for residents to not have the deprivation of rights that would be the grounds to the lawsuit. It is a win, 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 win. And it's all just about the kind of restoration and reparation of this relationship between the public and local unit of government that we've talked about a lot tonight.
And restoring trust. Now let's move to culture, because look, as the saying goes, culture eats training for breakfast, right? So you can have all these great training programs, but if you have people that are involved in departments that, and again, we're painting with a broad brush. I'm old enough to have educated when I was teaching at Carroll University, now police detectives with Milwaukee Police Department. And now in my role as an adjunct faculty member at Marquette Law School, having current prosecutors have come through my class and defenders. And so I have a lot of friends among those groups, but it is my perception that you can affect the culture of a department by focusing on who do we want to hire. So that guardian analogy that you were making earlier, you know, that came out of the police and law enforcement movement. Are we warriors or are we guardians, right? As it relates to how we patrol our city. And, you know, do you see a role for the city attorney's office, at least in advising, you know, on maybe other models that are working elsewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have every intention of not burying myself in the top floor of the annex somewhere. Yeah, I'm not, you got to be out there. And that includes riding along, that includes walking the neighborhood, that includes listening to all sides involved, and also paying attention to what's working in other places. Just because it happened in Baltimore doesn't mean we do the exact same thing. The exact same outcome happens in Milwaukee, but it means we should pay attention to what they're doing. You know, we should challenge ourselves and the status quo here to always be seeking evidence and following that evidence to what that best practice is. Starts with listening, Craig, right? A lot of this is just kind of what is the tone? What is the culture? What is that? What's the feeling on the block? And you know, we have a lot of experts right here. You know, I've talked about them as guardians, the little old lady that knows everybody's business on the block. A lot of people have a lot of expertise in our own community. That we just have to, you know, break down those barriers and listen to what they're saying.
It is a part of any healthy city to address these topics. And I agree with you. There's no one fix. It's been a great discussion. You and I could roll right into a second hour talking about crime, criminal justice in our city. But thank you for coming on tonight. Wisconsin State Representative Evan Goyke, 18th District and candidate for Milwaukee City Attorney. I will be back and filling in for Mark.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, "I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action." Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 90.